You hear that? The sides are forming. Lines are being drawn. The real battle begins.
What a fiery start to this game.
All across the land, fans are ready. Players are ready. We are ready to hear one thing.
Shut up! The bullies on Triple M!
Huge crowd, massive occasion. Umpire says we're ready to go.
Ripping crowd in the MCG as well.
The crowd tells the story. Unbelievable scenes.
The Triple MCG. The improving Carlton.
Forward to Curno for 45, bending goal.
Mark Murphy approaches forward 50.
Paddy Cripps now finds himself in the forward pocket.
Back with a fly, Davey, great courage.
Take on Premiership favourites Richmond.
The don't argue from Dusty.
Watch it!
Reebok for the bandit line. Bending it.
Castagna pirouetting, spinning and goaling.
It's the Blues.
People all around us getting excited.
Tigers.
It's on here, Juddy.
This
is what the crowd came to see.
It's Triple M footy.
The MCG erupts.
Shut up. The footy's on Triple M.
It's never been bigger.
Oh, big atmosphere.
More massive moments.
What about that?
Every massive match.
The energy, the electricity is building.
Massive.
For McDonald's.
Triple M rocks footy.
Yeah, another pre-season is behind us and the long wait is over. The 2019 AFL season gets off in earnest tonight. The MCG, the venue, glorious Melbourne conditions for the Blues and the Tigers to get the season underway. A massive game, big crowd expected. And we have a solid preview to kick things off. Neil Baum, the general manager of footy, to join us very shortly from the Tigers bunker. We'll then go to Brendan Bolton a little bit later on to have a chat about the Blues and their chances tonight and what you can expect for this emerging Carlton team. It's been a long road back for the Blues. They've got six players making their debut, a couple of debutants, four players from other clubs. As I look around the box, and there are champs everywhere. The Tiger and Bulldog champ, Nate Brown. Welcome, Brownie.
Yeah, good to be here, Schwartz. I can't wait for this one. I remember going back to 2007, one of my favourite moments. I was starting out of the goal square, the Richo. First kick of the season, Kane Johnson grabs it, barrel the other way, straight to Favola. That's how we got started in 07.
As we welcome the St Kilda champ, a big part of what we do on Triple M, Joey Montagna. Welcome, Joey.
Thank you, Swatter. Thank you, guys. Great to be here. Looking forward to it. Round one always brings hope. You never know what your team is going to produce this year. There's one person in the box who thinks Carlton might even make the eighth, nearly. We'll talk about that later, but it's exciting time of year. Can't wait.
As we welcome one of the champs of the media world, he's been a big part of what we do for the last few years, and that is Jay-Z. Welcome, Jay Clark.
Yes, hello, Swatter. Hello, boys, I tell you what, I've just been watching Sam Walsh warm up. I know we've been banging on about this bloke for the past couple of weeks, but he's been lacing out Michael Gibbons with low bullets inside that forward 50. Just looks and moves like a young Trent Cotchin. I know it's been hard yards for Carlton the past couple of years, but they are going to enjoy watching this man tonight.
For McDonald's, Triple M rocks footy. Macca's all-day menu available 24-7. Boys, I was in a bike shop a few weeks back. And there was a reasonably healthy-looking middle-aged man there with a real beard on. And I reckon it took me 7 minutes to work out who it was. And I managed to recognise that man, still sporting the beard too by the look of it down there, is our guest. And that is the GM of football at Richmond, Neil Baum. Welcome, Barmy.
I dream of being middle-aged.
welcome, Barmy. Pre-season's behind us. A lot to look forward to. So much attention around Tommy Lynch. How has the off-season been?
Yeah, pretty exciting. I mean, we had to recover from being somewhat disappointed with the preliminary final, but I mean, it was a pretty tough game. We were beaten by a very good side, but you got to get that behind you and just sort of revel in the fact that we were in a position to challenge, and that's all we can do for this year, and then see what happens. So our boys have been pretty good. They've really enjoyed it. They're mentally and attitudinally, they're in a fantastic position. But ask me in 3 hours, I reckon we'll know a bit more about it. But because Carlton look terrific, don't they, with half a dozen new players and real bit of excitement about what they're doing. So we'll have to do well to knock them off tonight.
It's been a hard team to break into, Barmy, the Tiger lineup the last 2 years. And two players come to the footy club. Matt Weller's played 120-odd games, but young Noah Bolter, both picked to play in this game tonight. That's a big tick for those two players.
Oh, it's terrific for them, isn't it? I think it's a little bit as we've got a pretty full list, but there's two or three. There's Jason Castagna and Cads and Grigor, who normally play, who aren't available, so that opens the opportunity for those two kids. But Mav's played a lot of footy, he knows what to do. And Noah's really exciting. He's been pretty good in JLT, and you know, we were kind of pretty tempted to play him last year and never quite got around to it. But he's you know, 6'5" in the old and athletic and runs fast and jumps high. So we've really got to just play him and see what he can do.
Tell us about Tommy Lynch. Barmy, obviously he comes into that forward structure with Jack Riewoldt there. Are you going to lose any of that manic forward pressure, which of course swept up the competition a couple of years ago? Is that going to change its flavour much?
It certainly makes it slightly different. But I mean, in the earlier parts of 17 particularly, we were always trying to play the extra tall and didn't quite get away with it, and then finished up playing Jake Townsend in a relatively defensive role. So that changed things a bit. But if you've got quality forwards like both Tom and Jack, I think that's a bit bigger problem for opponents than chasing them when the other team's got the ball. But there will be a bit of a change required, a bit more work from the other blokes on the ground, I would think.
It is hard to look at JLT form and take it too seriously, but you did start very slowly in both games. 5 goals behind against the Demons, 7 against the Hawks. Ended up okay, but did you put that down to anything?
No, well, even this game last year, it was 5 goals to nothing against. So, I mean, it's pretty hard to, you know, sometimes that doesn't necessarily reflect what happens on the field. You just take your chances or you don't. But, I mean, a bit of it too is that, you know, we try and approach the game from a practical, logical point of view rather than getting too excited about it at the start. And maybe we've got to, you know, pick up the rating a bit at the start, perhaps. I'm not sure. You know what it's like. Like, if you really get, you know, carried away with the game, you make a lot of mistakes. So we try and do it in a fairly logical way. But, you know, sometimes, particularly at the start of a game, but it is a bit manic, and maybe the other team takes advantage of us. So hopefully that won't happen tonight.
But, I mean, I think we love the honest comments from Dustin Martin throughout the week, where he opened up on last season some of the challenges he faced. He said he felt a bit unfulfilled or struggled for the same motivation as he had in 2017. Can I ask you when, from your perspective, when you maybe saw Dustin look or feel a little bit off, and as a football club, how you supported and managed him through, you know, last year when he had these challenges?
Oh, the truth was he didn't play anywhere near as he played in 17, but that's almost impossible. I think we treated it that way. We kind of looked at him and thought, if his name was Trevor Smith, he's playing pretty good footy.
Yeah.
He's Dusty Martin. He's not playing it quite as well or effectively as he did the year before. So we weren't quite as concerned about it as it was happening. But you know, that's just what it's like. Like, it's when you play a year like he played, it's very hard to follow up. It's very hard to find the motivation week after week. And he was terrific with it, but his pre-season this year has been outstanding. He's trying to set himself to do another 17, so pretty exciting for all of us. But, you know, it was good that he was able to talk about it, help other people when they're in that sort of circumstance. So, I mean, they talk about the mental health issues. It was just challenging for him, and he did suffer a bit of anxiety for not playing as well as he'd like, but he certainly wasn't in terrible shape.
Barmett, your all-star centre-half back rolled into AFLX on a skateboard. Take us back to the 1970s, and if Neil Baum had been around the AFLX, what would have you been sporting?
I would have fallen off the skateboard and broken my leg, I reckon. That'd be me. But, yeah, well, I try not to think back to how stupid I might have been. I've matured into a much smarter person.
Barmy, Brandon Ellis, emergency tonight, struggled towards the end of last year. What keeps him out?
Yeah, his form was down a little bit. Nothing much, really. He played pretty well. I saw the early part of a reserves BFL practice game tonight, and he played pretty good footy. He can run. He knows how to play. He's great at this level. I guess it's just that our challenge, how do we get better? He needs to probably play a little more consistently, perhaps, but certainly if he were playing tonight, we'd be happy for that to happen, so he'll get his chances.
We're interested in the new rules, of course, Barmy. 6-6-6 with the starting positions tonight, and I guess all the commentary so far has been that it will reward the better centre clearance teams, and you guys haven't been one of those in the past couple of years. Have you changed your structure much, or will you be more aggressive at the centre bounce to try and capitalise there? Has there been much tinkering with the new rules coming in?
Oh, we've sort of looked at it all, but you've just really just got to see how it plays out. I mean, we can't change all that much of what we do in the centre bounce if we're going to play the same ruckman and relatively the same on-ballers. Mm. We've just got to recognise that, you know, we've got to be a touch bit better at it. We haven't been terrible, but we haven't been fantastic, so I think we'll just have to see how we go. But, I mean, most teams at times would like to drop that seventh behind the ball just to give them a bit of support, etc. Now we can't do that until after the bounce, so probably opens the game up a little bit, but I don't think that'll hurt us.
Well, I'm a big fan of people that get out and exercise, Barmy. Did you buy that bike?
I have. I've cheated a bit. It has got a little bit of an electric assistance.
I'm glad you said it, because I was about to throw you under the bus. But an e-bike, nonetheless. Well done, Barmy. Good luck tonight.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, Neil Barm, what a ripper, an absolute star. And the Tigers, a lot to look forward to.
Well, they have, Schwatter. They certainly have. You turned 50 recently. You turn 50. That is a big milestone. And I'd like to point out that you're still dressing like you're 16. You've got the long jeans on, but they're rolled up. You've got about seven rolls on the jeans. Sometimes
it was either this or the overall.
You've got to realise that Country Road is where you need to shop.
You've got to roll with the overall. Just because you're 50 doesn't mean that you're old, Brownie.
In all serious, Schwatter, you had your bike ride.
I did.
How are you feeling? I mean, you rode up to Sydney.
No, we went to? From Marvel Stadium. We went 1,800 kilometres over 10 days.
Yep.
And I may have, in fact, I did push people too far this time.
Oh. You broke them.
Yep, pretty much, and broke myself first.
How'd you go?
No good. After day four, that was it. Couldn't ride anymore.
Your ride, and you pulled out.
Correct.
It's a quick ride.
Yeah, no ticker. No, but it was an amazing experience. Yep. We really amplified the conversation, which we're trying to amplify, which is around suicide prevention. And when you sit there and you watch, 43 other people give up 10 days of their life and really passionately commit themselves to this issue. Scotty Cummings, may surprise you, not built for bike riding, rode every kilometre, was amazing. We had seven incredible women who did a fantastic job. Yeah, I couldn't be happier. So anyone want to come on next year's ride? We need a few more people.
I need to do some exercise, but I don't know if I can do that.
My calves are big enough already.
You'd struggle, but you'd look good. Jay-Z.
Yeah, Schwatter, we're excited about the debut of Tom Lynch tonight, of course, the Richmond Spearhead. What do you think, Brownie? How is this going to work? Because there is a bedding down process when you've got two alpha males in the forward line. In fact, three when you include Dustin Martin. How long is it going to take these guys to sort of work out their patterns, their familiarities, get a partnership happening? Because there's going to be times tonight where Riewoldt, Tom Lynch do cross over each other, get in each other's space, right?
Will be, yeah. But I rate Jack Riewoldt one of the smartest football minds out there. I mean, he is electric at picking things up, and I think he will pick it up quicker than maybe what Tom Lynch does. And Tom Lynch will take a little bit of time to ease into the Richmond style. But I would have thought Riewoldt played high a fair bit last year. I expect him probably to play that high role. He's work rate is extraordinary compared to what it was 5 or 6 years ago. That's a big plus to his game. And Tom Lynch is a good worker as well. I mean, some of the better games I've seen him play is when he gets up to the wing and then he charges back towards goal with his opponent. So, I don't see it being a huge issue early. Yep. I don't think the coaching staff would. I expect Lynch to play behind Riewoldt and Riewoldt to do most of the work out at centre-half forward.
I don't think it's a big issue because I think internally, Tom Lynch's expectations or the club that have on him is to be a role player. He's just there to play a role, to bring the ball to ground, to provide a contest when they're needing some long options. We know how Richmond like to play with the long kicks. I'm not probably as bullish as some other commentators that Tom Lynch is going to be the best player in the competition and kick 70 goals. I think he's
you undersell him, Joey.
I don't think he's a career. His career player is 15 disposals and 2 goals is what he's done over his career, which is 8 years. He's not a young player that's played 4 seasons of football. He's played 8 seasons, and his career average is about a 15 disposal, 2 goal a game. And I think if he does that for Richmond for the season and kicks his between 40 to 50 goals, provides a contest, brings the ball to ground, I think Richmond will be pumped with him. So I think he's going to be playing as a more of a role player in this team, with Jack Riewoldt still the dominant forward and Dusty Martin still doing what he does. And I think that's the expectation internally at Richmond.
He's got to be better than that.
Why?
Dermy Burrett and John Brown said he could be the number one player in the game 2 years ago. Yes, he's average. His returns have been modest, Joey. Mm. But that's because he's been at the Gold Coast Swamp. There's been no development up there.
I disagree with that, because I still think the best players in the competition are still the best players, even if you're at the worst club in the team. We don't say that about Paddy Cripps. We didn't say that about Nick Riewoldt when he was in a St Kilda team that was third last in the ladder, or Matthew Pavlich when he played the bottom team at Fremantle. The best players in the comp are still the best players, no matter what state they're in what team they're in. Tom Lynch hasn't reached those. He's had one season where he was an All-Australian, kicked 66 goals and was a really good player. Otherwise, he's a 40-goal kicker. And I think he'll do that at Richmond. He'll kick 40 or 50 goals. He'll be a big part of their team. He's a very handy player. But I don't see him being the best player in the competition.
I don't mind where you were speaking about the fact that they'd have to drop off a little bit in their manic defensive pressure just because Tom Lynch is there. And he'll do his part, but he is not the player that they've had there last year. So it does change it up a little bit. But still, they do have players like Butler and Edwards charging around that Mavwella down there. So they certainly have that across half back, that line. But if it does get deep and it does come out a little bit extra, they might have to look at that.
Brownie, you went to the Bulldogs after leaving the Tigers. New game plan, new teammates. How long do you think it takes players to settle in instinctively to a new group?
Look, you do so much training over a pre-season, Swatty. You might train two times a day, five times a week, and you've had 50 to 60 training sessions with these guys, and you've played probably three or four practice matches plus two official practice matches. So by the time round one comes around, you should be pretty well versed in how the side works, and if you're a smart player, you pick it up pretty quickly.
Which you were.
Mav Weller really interests me, Joey. St Kilda fans would be scratching their heads, I reckon, tuning in tonight, because he, you know, was in and out of the team, gets cut from their list. He walks straight to the Richmond club and into their top, their best 22 for the round one blockbuster like tonight. Someone has got it wrong here. Either St Kilda have criminally underrated this man, or Richmond think he is better than he is. Why? How can that happen?
No, he lost confidence at St Kilda, and I think a little bit the coaching staff lost confidence in him. But I think at Mav's best, he's a very important player, and he's exactly the type of player that Richmond like in their front half. He's a powerful athlete. He's aggressive. He can reset and get inside 50 and apply pressure. And when Mav's up and going, I think he's a really good player. Now, in his first year at St Kilda, he was a very important player at the football club, and then lost a bit of confidence. The club lost a bit of faith in him, and he lost his way a little bit. And his role probably, he probably, after a very good first year at St Kilda, probably wanted to do more. He probably wanted to become more of an important player in regards to getting possessions, and probably lost his greatest strength,
which is
his tackle pressure, his work rate, and his getting to the ball. And if I think now, again, like what I thought with Tom Lynch at Richmond, if Mav just plays his role, he'll get an opportunity to play week in, week out if he continues to do it. And I think if he accepts that, and maybe he's learnt from his time at St Kilda that, no, I've just got to know my limitations, know what I'm good at. If he does that, I think he'll be a very handy inclusion.
You'd think he'd have to do that. You'd think he'd realise himself, OK, I'm playing in a premiership side here. I've come from St Kilda who didn't have great success, and it was hard work around the role I was playing in. But if I do my role here and I do exactly what I'm asked, I might play all year. And look, I'm not going to kick 30 goals, but if I get 20 and I lay the tackles I can, then there's no reason he has to go out of this side. He's got his round one spot. Yes, Castagna's not out there, and that's probably that spot that might take, but he's got that role now. And if he does his role and Richmond win games of football, there's no reason to put him out.
Especially if you know your career's on the line. I think Mav knows that's where he's at. His third club, he needs to do that. It's a bit like Michael Gibbons at Carlton, who's a ball winner. He's won two listings. He knows how to find the footy. At Carlton, he now knows that he's just got to play his role in this forward line tonight. He's playing for his career. So he'll play his role and sacrifice what his strengths are to what the team wants. And if Mav does that, I think he'll have a terrific year.
And Mav can always fall back on the modelling career in Milan if he does it. He's an extraordinary looking man.
Although his brother's better looking, I think, Lockie.
Really?
The poor Saints. Brownie, the other side of the coin, you dropped a bombshell on the Rush Hour earlier today. You said Carlton could win 8 to 10 games this season. This is a club which won only two footy games last year. Yes, 13 new faces on their round 23 team and six new faces out there tonight. Why are you so bullish about the Blues?
It just has to turn. You don't have this much talent in your list. 12 players with a first-round pick in this side tonight. Add Matty Cruz, add O'Brien. That's 14 potential round one picks. You don't have that much talent without at some point it all clicking and at some point them playing well together. And if they don't play well together, then you've got to start to look at the coaching staff and the structure around it and the game plan of what they do, because there is enormous talent on this list. Their midfield now is starting to look really juicy. And I like the fact that McKay, McGovern and Curno will play together. For so long, It was Kaz Bolt, and if it didn't go to Kaz Bolt, it just went out with enormous pace. And now they've got three prongs to kick to. I just think it's going to turn quicker for Carlton than what a lot of people think.
A lot of hype around Sam Walsh, Jay-Z, Joey.
Yeah, he's been outstanding, Joe. I mean, I think he's one of the shortest price round one rising star favourites in a long time. What do you like about it?
Look, I spoke to someone at Carlton who said he's training like he's an eight-year player. He's been able to do all the sessions. He's not getting he's not training like a first-year player where they pull them out and they've got to ease them into it. They are saying he's ready-made. He's 82 kilos. He's a good size. They think his contested ball winning is at a level that he's already very, very competent for someone at that age. By all reports, he's going to walk in like a Joel Selwood and just from day one be an important player in this midfield. And that's very exciting.
Is it a concern, though, Brownie, that he is arguably their second best midfielder already? Patrick Cripps is the top. Like, you see, in the preseason, the game against Collingwood.
Yeah, but that's how good he is. How good he is coming in. And you got Mark Murphy there also. And, I mean, you got Paddy Dow.
Zach Fisher's a good player.
Who's that? They are all going to get better, but they're all young, too. There's Mark Murphy, and then there's a big gap to the rest of them, obviously. Simpson plays on the back flank. But the one I'm going to ask Brendan Bolton about later, O'Brien, played 18 games last year, very high pick as well. I'm not sure why he's out of the side.
There are eight other games to be played across the opening round. Jay-Z, what's making news from team selection point of view?
The teams have just dropped Schwatter, and the biggest name is Josh Kelly of GWS. Hasn't played a GLT game over the pre-season. He's not named to take on the Bombers, so great news for Essendon. They're missing a few guys at GWS, so it will be a very interesting clash. Interestingly, at Hawthorn, Jack Scrimshaw, he's like Grant Birchall on the halfback flank, named for his first game. Couldn't get a game up there at Gold Coast, but made quite an impression on Alistair Clarkson and the rest of the Hawthorn crew. West Coast, are they vulnerable against Brisbane on Sunday? They'll be missing their top spearhead, Josh Kennedy, Willie Rioli, Cripps, of course. So it will be a new look forward line for the Eagles. And at the Cats, it'll be a new look Geelong outfit, Joey. We've spoken about the new game plan they're going to be playing with, trying to tackle inside that forward half, which they weren't great at last year. But Tommy Atkins, Grian Myers, another small forward, comes in. Charlie Constable, Harden up in the midfielder. Dalhouse, of course, will be in there. Gary Rowan and Jordan Clark have been so impressive over the pre-season. So they're the best ones at Collingwood. Of course, Jordan Ruffett will come in, help solidify that back half. Joey at full-back. Darcy Moore been flying through the pre-season. Start at centre-half back, but I don't think they've found room for Tyson Goldsack. And that is the competition for spots and increased depth that we're seeing at Collingwood. It's a tough 22 to break into.
It is. Having a look at the games over the off-season of the JLT, the team that struck me the most that had tinkered with the way they play, as you said, Jay-Z, was Geelong.
Yep.
Now, they started Dangerfield and also Selwood on the outskirts a lot, and they had Constable in the middle, and they had Atkins forward. So they did look at the Richmond model and think, we might go down that path. They've taken Menzel out, obviously. He's gone to Sydney. Tommy Hawkins isn't the greatest pressure player, but they've added players in there that can do that. So of all the clubs, I think Geelong have made the biggest changes.
And I've liked it because I think Geelong have realised you can't keep doing the same thing you're always doing and expect to get different results. They know the way they're playing only gets them to a certain point. So I like the courage of their new look front half. It's going to be a team that's going to apply a lot of pressure with these youngsters and the players they brought into the club. It allows Tommy Hawkins and Gary Ablett to stick to what they do best and try and kick goals in that forward 50. So I think it's a great move by Chris Scott. A little bit like, I think, Port Adelaide, what they've done by picking all these youngsters. They're taking a risk to say, we need to go backwards to get better. We need to find more talent. And some clubs are realising at the moment, to compete with the Melbourne, Richmond, West Coast and Collingwoods of the competition, they need to find more talent. They can't compete the way it is at the moment. Those teams are too stacked with talent.
I know they're talking about Gary Ablett playing forward, and I think he has to play forward for the longevity of his career. And people will say, you know, he has to play his role. It doesn't matter how many goals he kicks, but regularly Luke Bruce kicks 50-plus. Regularly Eddie Betts kicks 50-plus. So I think that's the benchmark. If Gary Ablett can kick 50-plus, yep, that is a huge year for Gary Ablett, and there's no reason why he can't do it. He's smart enough. He's strong enough. Is he strong enough above his head? Because his shoulders are... He looks sore when he goes above his head, so that might be a little bit of a query, but I think he's smart enough to get the 50.
He's going to have to embrace the contact because that's going to be coming in the forward 50. He's going to be pretty closely tagged, whether that's Levi Greenwood tomorrow night. I haven't seen their team, but he will certainly get some attention. Schwatt, I want to ask you about Jesse Hogan. It's been arguably the biggest news story of the week. A lot of Fremantle fans disappointed that he made some poor choices around alcohol consumption last week, which led the Fremantle Football Club to not consider him for this weekend's match. They play North Melbourne on Sunday, and it's an open-ended timeline. Now, they initially said that he's been treated for clinical anxiety. I note that they have now dropped that term around clinical. It is simply just anxiety. From far away, how are you seeing the Fremantle Football Club handling this issue?
Well, I mean, if a condition's diagnosed, there's no need to put clinical in front of anything. It is what it is. I don't doubt that Jesse's got these conditions that he's dealing with. I've found it interesting in two respects. The more I've listened to Ross Lyon every time he's fronted the media this week, the more I've been impressed. He's a coach that if I was playing and I saw the way that he stood up, answered questions on my behalf when I was going through what I did, I'd love it because I knew he had my back and that would take enormous pressure off me. And the more that I've heard Ross, I've just been super impressed to the point where yesterday I heard him say, back off. Enough's enough. We've answered questions. The guy's got to deal with certain things. I can understand the Fremantle supporters being disappointed that Jesse has made poor choices, and I'm not condoning those poor choices. But I want those people to understand, when you're living with these conditions, we make poor choices because we're under enormous emotional stress. I don't believe Jesse doesn't care about his career. I believe he cares greatly about his career. He cares greatly about the opportunity he's got. But I self-medicated with alcohol and drugs for two-thirds of my career because I was desperate. I didn't have the skill set or emotional intelligence or maturity to deal with these things productively. I'm not giving Jesse an out because he has to accept responsibility. I'm just trying to educate people. When we're under these, under this sort of emotional stress, people will make poor choices. It's not the person. It's someone who's desperately trying to deal with a situation that perhaps they don't have the skill set with. More broadly, I think the industry is maturing. I really do. I think we have work to go, but I think that on the whole, as a general observation, we are starting to get better at recognising that these are serious issues and we're dealing with them in a more productive, inclusive manner.
So what do you say then about the talk about people that are taking advantage of this mental health? Well, I think that's grown legs and got out of control, my personal opinion, that someone threw it out there and now anyone who comes out and says they've got some mental health issues, it's now tarred with, oh, they might be just using that as an excuse. And the commentators, because most of the commentators and journalists and ex-players don't have a degree in medical science.
Neither do I.
So is it fair for these journalists or commentators to have opinions on something that they actually don't know very much about? I understand if they comment on what we see on the football field tonight, but to comment on things that we don't know about, a bit like concussion, we don't know enough about it. So we are happy to say, well, we shouldn't be commenting on how a player should handle his concussion. It should be the similar way with mental health. Are we maturing enough as an industry, a media industry, in how we talk about these topics?
Your second part of that was, I like that end of the question, Joe, and I'm going to get to that shortly. I think we have to take players on face value. People have mental health conditions. They have mental health conditions. I think, I'm joining dots here, I think the reference to players using it as an excuse might be more tied to potentially players using reporting mental health conditions to get away from a strike with regards to illicit drugs. I think that's more inclined to happen as opposed to players just saying, I've got mental health conditions, not take responsibility. So I'll always take players on face value. I don't doubt that Jesse Hogan's got these conditions, so I'll park that for now. I have, for a long time, been of the position, and perhaps I'm a lone voice on this. If we are going to have constructive conversations on topics such as mental health, we have a responsibility to educate ourselves at a basic level so that we can communicate and be in conversations around it. And the reason why I have a problem with the industry is that sometimes we can do more damage. We're not just talking about AFL players here. This is representative of the broader community. And if we're not constructive, if we're not respectful, and we don't acknowledge that these are legitimate medical conditions, the way that we communicate around this issue can cause people further stress. We can't afford to do that. We're in a fortunate position. We have platforms. Well, let's use our platform for good. Educate ourselves, because it's not just our players, our coaches, our colleagues, people in the stands that we work with every weekend could be dealing with these things. But if we don't feel comfortable, my advice would be just park your opinion.
Brandon, it's fair to say that Fremantle fans are already feeling nervous about the trade and how quickly he can make an impact. Can I ask you about Jesse Hogan on the field? Because he's a 195-centimetre running machine.
Yep.
He can mark the ball well. We know he can finish on goal. He played a little bit midfield for Melbourne last year. I think he could be a top 20 player in the competition if he gets it all together. Is that overrating it?
No, got all the skill sets. And where Joey talked about Tom Lynch being a 15-disposal, 2-goal, Jesse Hogan's more your 2.5-goal, 20, 22-disposal player. And he has that engine and he has that ability to read the footy so well. And I guess where the question now comes up at the Fremantle Football Club, they're a bit hamstrung at the moment because they've got Jesse out, they've got Cam McCarthy out indefinitely, and they've also got Harley Bunnell out indefinitely. So on paper, if I said, and they're three really good players, I'd put them three together in the forward end and I'd say,
elite.
I'd expect 120 to 150 goals between those guys, and they're probably being paid between them $1.8 million. So you'd have to ask the question of Fremantle, how is their list management going? Because
which they said they would review last year because of that.
Three similar type problems at the one time, and they do need to review it. Going to head down to the boundary now to somebody who's just everywhere. She's across everything at the moment. Cricket, football, basketball, anything you want to do, this girl does it. Nerily Meadows down on the boundary.
Thank you very much, Brownie. I'm a little bit nervous down here because they're setting up about a metre away things that say G-Flame on them as the pre-entertainment. So hopefully we're in safe hands. I've got Brendan Bolton, the coach of Carlton, alongside me. Brendan, excitement about round one, but I want to talk about one of your leaders, former captain Mark Murphy, playing game 250. What do you love most about him?
Oh, it's more now just about the legacy he wants to leave. He knows he's in the back part of his career, but he's investing really heavily in our young midfield group. And, it could have been so tempting for him. is, and he didn't. So I'm just proud that he's there to leave a legacy.
There's a lot of work this pre-season into the new rules. The rule changes. You've got a smile on your face. What excites you? What scares you? What have you done the most work on?
Well, centre square bounce, I don't have to waste 3 hours a week on the setup around the outside. So I think that's helped everyone. Now, I like that. I think it allows exciting midfield to show their flair and get out of there when there's space and not someone about to headbutt them pretty quickly.
Nearly's been down on the boundary for Bob Jane Team Arts. Bolts, Tom Lynch has had a really good career, particularly against Carlton. Every time he comes up against you guys, seems to kick big goals. What have you got in store for him?
Well, we've got Weeders and Jonesy going okay themselves, so I'm looking forward to how that challenge unfolds. But really, it's going to be about our midfield not allowing fast supply to him.
What about your three tools, Bolts? You've got now McKay McGovern and, of course, Curnow down there. That must be exciting for the midfield to look up and see the three tools.
Yeah, they're a work in progress, but all three of them are really athletic. And you add Fasolo, who is a proven goal kicker. I think we've got a real element of difference. They've trained together over the pre-season, so I think every week they're going to build, but all of them can catch it, and they're really athletic.
Bolts, can I ask you about Alex Fasolo? He comes across from Collingwood, and then pretty embarrassingly broke his arm, a few drinks with his mates on New Year's Eve, I think it was. Since then, how have you assessed his response? Because I can imagine that first conversation with you would have been a pretty difficult one.
Yeah, no, you're right. He was embarrassed and we were frustrated because he was having a terrific pre-season. But I must admit, since the conversation, he was all focused on repaying the club and his mates, and that's why he's rewarded with round one. Andrew Russell's done a power of work with him and he thinks he's probably as fit as he's ever been. So let's hope that transfers to a good performance tonight.
Bolts, what's the conversation been with Sam Walsh leading up to this game? Have you had to have much of a chat with him? Have you just let him go about things? Because there's been a lot of expectation, a lot of external noise with Sam Walsh. How have you handled him during this week?
Yeah, I thought about whether or not I need to manage all the hype, but I think it's very well deserved, by the way, he's played in the JLT. He's such a level customer, I didn't need to touch it. He doesn't let external noise infiltrate him at all, so I think he can overcoach first-yearers, and they're worried about structures. We've tried to let him go, so hopefully he can show that flair tonight and play with freedom.
Lockie O'Brien was a player who played 18 games last year in his first year. Not out there tonight. Where is he?
He's not far away. He played in the VFL tonight. He's a terrific athlete in terms of endurance. He's working and growing his contested game. So as that builds, he'll be looking to be selected in the next month, I would have thought.
Bolts, the balance of your game style has been interesting for us. I think early on you were really focused on bedding down the defensive aspects of the game, and then last year, especially in round one, we saw some more offensive aspects. How have you gone this summer? Has it been more of a balancing act, or have you focused on something specific there?
No, you're right there. We tried to focus in on defence. Last year we had so many changes in terms of personnel, we never really got settled with it, but this year we've zoned right into our defence again, but always with an eye of hurting on turnover.
Hey Bolts, I'm going to ask a really obvious question here for a lot of Blues fans tonight. Season opening game, what do you need to do as a group to give yourselves a chance of causing an upset and winning the game against the Tigers?
I think that centre square bounce battle is really, really important, so Phillips has got a huge role in there, as does our, I would call, fleet-footed mids around Cripps. So you've got to win that supply battle, no doubt about it. But the one thing that they can do is transition out of defence. We know Rance and Co set them up pretty well, so we've got to be able to lock it in there. It's going to be a big challenge, but one we're looking forward to.
Had a good pre-season, Bolts. I'm on record last night and tonight saying 8 to 10 wins is achievable. What do you think?
I'll never put a ceiling. I like those numbers because that's growth on last year. What we've said to our players is we're not going to put a number because, one, we don't want a ceiling, but we don't want them looking too far ahead. This quarter, this contest, this game is the most important thing for that particular 22 that take the field. So that's why we're not putting a number, but if we get up where you're saying, we've shown progress.
Bolts, I was at the JLT game down in Morwell against Collingwood. It was a great performance. I saw you shouting out from that old school coach's box because you were trying to get the message out there when your runner was unable. Are you going to be tempted to go down and coach from the bunker tonight without that, you know, the normal runner allowances?
Yeah, I think I will from time to time. Just on the state of the game will determine that. When games get really tight or we go into a phase of play, I like to get down there to make sure that that message is transferred quickly, particularly with a young group.
Will you use a senior player, Bolts, more often this year? Will you use Cade Simpson or Mark Murphy maybe as that player that can get the messages out to the rest of the playing group, or will you steer clear from that?
No, there's a real responsibility on the leaders to do that. That's why they're in the leadership group. It's no good leading during the week and then not on the field. So a big responsibility, but more importantly, we're all on these same rules. So our young group want to learn to lead, and these are the opportunities to do it now.
Bolts, on a lighter note, mate, how are the barbecues with the players going? I saw the Great Fox Footy interview. You did talking about building those player relationships because there's a great strain on your time, obviously. But how are the Friday afternoon burgers with the boys going?
Well, I'm pretty simple. I like a steak and a salad, so or a meat and three veg, me from Tassie. But ask Harry McKay. He gives me a stir. He reckons I've never cooked just a medium. I've always got a char grill, so he's giving me a bit of stick, the big fella.
Hey, Brendan, just before we let you go, Matty Cruiser, how close and what role will you have Sam Doherty fulfil throughout the course of the season?
Yeah, well, Doc will take on that bench coach role again. We've always said players, if they could coach before they play, it'd really help. He's fortunate to get that opportunity, although we'd love to have him out there. That'll help him into the future. And Cruiser is probably in the next few weeks, yeah.
We appreciate you joining us. Good luck tonight.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
There you go, Brendan Bolton. Fourth year as senior coach of the Blues. And I love the content that the Blues create.
Yep.
Takes their supporters on the journey. There's a good sense of relationship development there. They've got a big task tonight, though. I don't think anybody else here think that they can beat the Tigers.
No, I don't think they can beat the Tigers. But I think Brownie makes the point about you start looking at their team on paper and you see the talent and you see the potential. So I think now Carlton fans are starting to get a bit more expectation, and they'll get frustrated if this talent and the list doesn't start turning into wins. So I'm probably not as optimistic as Brownie. I think they'll be more competitive in a lot of games. I just don't know if they'll end up converting them into wins, and they'll test the patience of Carlton fans.
What they will do is start well, because they've realised that maybe Richmond haven't started well, and they're both 28 points down against the Demons and 42, I think, against the Hawks. So they'll prey on that. They'll come out, and young sides and young players in particular, and you know when you were young, Joey, it's easy to play really well for a certain amount of time when you're young and you've got a young list around you. Over the course of two and a half quarters, you start to slow down, and the real class of the other side might take over. So they're going to be in this, you know, in the first quarter, up to quarter time, up to half time. Let's hope they can stay in it for a long time.
Thought you brought up a really interesting point when you asked Bolts whether or not Cade Simpson becomes an on-ground coach. The restrictions now on the runners and their involvement in the game really lends itself to those teams that have a number of on-field leaders, Joey.
Yeah, you're going to have to. And I think you're going to have to rely on the players coming on and off the interchange bench to send out a message. And that's going to test some players, because I know at St Kilda, there'd be times where they'd send a message to a player and they'd watch him. And as soon as he went on the ground, he'd forgotten. He ran straight to his
name. Oh, there'd be
names.
Some players.
Names.
I played with players. You wouldn't even bother.
There was one,
just go out there and play.
There was one famous day, Sam Gilbert got a message specifically run over to this player and tell him this position. They watched Sam Gilbert. He ran completely different, started chasing the ball and never got the message out. So that might frustrate some coaches, because they can't utilise the runner. So they're going to have to rely on their players on the bench to deliver messages. And you can't always rely on players when the game's on.
Brownie, it has to be great for the game. I don't want to see the system and the structure. I want to see players play on instinct. Is it good to get them off the ground?
Some of the rule changes they've made this year, I was sceptical of a lot, but I think the rule changes are going to be a good thing.
I think that's great. We want randomness. We want instinct. We don't need coaches and runners out there to try and block up the game.
Got to talk about the Footy Show. Brownie was outstanding production last night with the new
very
team.
Good,
Neroli was outstanding hosting it with Lima. Some robust footy chat, of course, in there, as well as some light and shade. But I wanted to ask you about one thing, and Joey, yourself as well. The big call from Brennan Favola last night that Alan Richardson, the St Kilda coach, could be sacked after round one if the Saints lose to the Suns at the weekend. There's not a chance in. They could lose by 10 goals and they wouldn't be so silly to make such a knee-jerk reaction. Alan Richardson, with the injury St Kilda has at the moment, needs more time, fellas. Am I right? At least 6 weeks to assess what's going to happen there. I know he's under the pump, but if they lose, he's not getting the lemon and sauce.
No, of course not. No, Fev's just thrown that out there on the Footy Show, first night of the show. Look, everything's hypothetical. So, I mean, we can't sort of talk about what will happen in 6 weeks' time depending on where St Kilda's at. It's all hypotheticals. We hope St Kilda go well and there's no drama. If they don't win a game in the first 8 weeks, of course, there's going to be a lot on this plate. I don't really know where it's going to go at.
But it doesn't hinge on round one.
Of course it doesn't hinge on round one. No, absolutely not.
not.
It's just the fact that they are playing the Gold Coast Suns, yep. who many think have put together the worst list in AFL history. Yep. Not because they've done that. It's because a lot of players have left and they haven't really had the structure around them.
It's so a VFL side.
They find themselves in a bad predicament.
It is a bit of a lose-lose.
If St Kilda do lose that game, it puts enormous pressure on round two and round three. He will not be sacked round one. That is 100% sure. But, if they do lose the first three by a big margin, I mean, they start to look at it then.
What's his contract position, Jay-Z?
He's out at the end of the year. He's got a trigger clause which can carry him into the next season, depending on how many games they win. But St Kilda could definitely make a decision on him at
their
the end.
Their pre-season form was solid, too.
They've been very good, actually.
Without a doubt. They've had some injuries late. So I think St Kilda win. I think they beat Gold Coast comfortably.
Shut up! The footy's on Triple M!
Triple M rocks footy.